Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Booth 61. Featuring movers and shakers on the Atlanta tech scene, organizations serving the tech market, and the inspired people who lead them. Now here's your host, Ricky Steele.
Welcome, and thank you for joining us in Booth 61. I am Ricky Steele, and I passionately serve as the Chief Development Officer for Hunter Technical Resources. Hunter is one of Atlanta's finest and hardest-working IT staffing providers, and this month we're celebrating our 15th anniversary, and we're all quite excited. As a matter of fact, in 3 weeks, I'm going to have the four founders on the show live on June 29th, so I am very, very excited about that. We have an exciting show today, very special show, very personal show for me. I have a great friend and mentor of mine who is going to be joining us, and I'm really looking forward to it. But before we get there, I first must introduce my new friend, our producer, Kevin Finn. Kevin is a master at the control board and a very accomplished host, hosting a number of shows on Business Radio X. Kevin, how are you today?
I'm doing great as usual, Ricky. It's always good to hang out with you in the studio.
We always have a lot of fun, and we've had some outstanding guests, and today will be no different.
Oh, always. You always bring some high-caliber talent to the radio station.
Well, be sure and jump in if you have any questions or something comes to mind later on, because Jeff is someone that's going to share some information on a broad spectrum of issues, and so if you feel so led, jump on in with us.
Will do. I always learn something.
That'll be great. That'll be great. Well, as I said, I am very excited about today's show. As people hear me talk for the last 3 or 4 months, the goal for Booth 61 is to build community, the technology community in the greater Atlanta area. And if we do that, we know the rising tide will lift all boats. Today's guest has been doing this in multiple ways and for quite a long time that we'll discuss over the next hour. I'm very honored to have in the studio today one of my dear friends, Mr. Jeff McConnell. Jeff is a friend, a mentor, a teacher, an advisor, and really a brother to me. I've had very few people open their arms so wide to me in my career in such a short period of time. I could spend the next 1 hour and then next week's show, another hour, talking about why I love Jeff McConnell and his family and why you should do everything you could do to meet Jeff. But that is not why you're listening to this show today, and I'm not going to embarrass him any more than probably I already have. I'm going to try to keep my editorial to a very minimum as much as possible as your host today. But if I go on a tangent or two during our time together, know that it is my heart talking rather than my head, which in reality is really the way I enjoy living, but that's a story for another day. Jeff McConnell is a graduate of the University of Florida, which as a bulldog, I'll try not to hold against him the best of my ability. He received his MBA from the University of Colorado. Jeff has been a senior officer at American Express, Western Union, Intigon, MoneyGram, and PRG Schultz. Jeff has been involved in numerous startup businesses. We're going to talk about the most current in a little bit. And he's really been a mentor to the entrepreneurial community, the entire startup community in the Atlanta area. It is with great respect and humble heart that I thank and welcome Jeff McConnell to Booth 61. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you. I'm not sure if I can live up to that introduction, but it's great to give it a shot.
Knowing you, I know that won't be hard. Well, as you heard, I promised our audience to keep my conversation to a minimum because they're tuning in to listen to you, and they're in for a treat. Why don't we get started by just telling us how you arrived in Atlanta, a Florida Gator, Colorado, how your career got you to this point in time from the University of Florida, and really, you know, we want to talk a little bit about the payments industry, but how you transitioned from the big payments industry of the Western Unions of the world, the big companies, into the startup arena. So kind of give us a history 101 of Jeff McConnell.
Yeah, so I started off early in my career. I thought I wanted to be an accountant. And so I majored in accounting at the University of Florida and went to work for one of the big eight at the time, Coopers & Lybrand, and realized pretty quickly that I didn't like keeping score. That was not nearly as much fun as trying to get up and swing at the ball and score. And so quickly I got out of public accounting and went into private industry in the accounting area, and I realized I liked keeping score for the companies even less than I liked keeping score for public accounting. And it took me a number of years to kind of move my way up through the finance ladder to where I got to a point where someone took a chance on me being a general manager. And that general manager's job was a role at Western Union, running a business called Easy Pay, in-person payments. And I worked for a great guy there named Mark Perlberg, who a couple of years later moved to Atlanta with a company called PRG Schultz. And then I, at the time, had gone on to MoneyGram, which we took public and then sold. And Mark called me and said, hey, would you like to join me and help turn PRG Schultz around? It had stumbled along its path, and so I did. And that got me to Atlanta in 2001. So that's kind of how I migrated along the way through Jacksonville, Fort Lauderdale, New York, Austin, Denver, L.A., Denver, North Carolina, and then to Atlanta. So a whole bunch of cities, and I've been here since 2001, and I think it's the best one so far.
And probably the greatest length of duration, because you've been settled here for a pretty good while.
Yeah, I think it is. I was thinking about that a couple of days ago. I think this is the longest stretch that I've been in one geography, and I think it's been great because it's allowed my kids to, you know, be in the same community throughout their schooling years. You know, my daughter's going to be a senior. My oldest will be a senior in high school this year, and she's gone to school in East Cobb the entire stretch. So I'm hoping I can do that with my younger one for a few more years as well.
We'll talk about this a little further into the program, but many of the listeners will know your wonderful wife, Jan, and your daughters, Elizabeth and Lauren, and what a great family man you are. But knowing your girls, they seem pretty settled, and with the horses and soccer and school, I don't think they're going to vote for moving anytime soon.
No, I don't think so. Although I think Elizabeth would vote for moving if it came with a horse farm. I think she would be all over that. But I think they've got a nice life and a lot of good friends, and it's kind of hard to disrupt that.
Well, you're a very special family, no question about it. We want to jump around a little bit, but I'd kind of like to maybe set the tone and get to Whisper Communications, which I included on the website today and on the show information. But you've been very active in the Atlanta startup community, probably as active as anybody I've seen in a number of years. What are some of the organizations you currently volunteer or help support on a regular basis? And really, I know that's kind of the genesis of how you got involved and met the folks at Whisper. So we'll probably extend this question number two and make it 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6, but kind of give us the genesis of how you got involved in the startup community.
Yeah, I think a number of years ago, Charles Ross, who lived across the neighborhood from me in East Hampton,
great guy,
met me at the pool, and we had just, you know, at the turnaround at PRG Schultz didn't work. Mark and I both left. And I was looking for something to do next. And he said, you know, we got a lot of neat stuff down here at the ATDC. We got a lot of neat stuff at Georgia Tech that's coming out. And one thing that we could use is somebody who's done some stuff, right? Somebody who's got some level of experience and can help out. Because we've got a lot of young companies that in a lot of cases don't even know what they don't even know what they don't even know. So they're pretty far away from knowing the right questions. And if you could spend a little time with them and answer some of the basics, you can really make a huge difference in their trajectory. You know, you can cut years off of their path if you can just avoid running down the wrong path for you know, some period of time. And that sounded like a great idea, you know, because I got to look at a lot of different businesses. I got to meet a lot of neat people. And honestly, there's nothing more exciting than being around people who are passionate about what they're doing. Whether they end up being successful with that venture or not, they're passionate about it. They've identified a problem. They've identified a way to try to solve it. And they're going to let nothing stand in their way. You know, it's sometimes a little difficult to coach people in that manner, but that's a lot of fun. And so I got involved in that. That got me some exposure and led to my first entrepreneurial deal, which was a company called Icobo. And I went as a CEO there to help kind of salvage an investment that people had made. That led to another one that was a company called Avalon International that the same VCs had invested in. And I helped navigate that one through a restructuring process, a sale. And got a nice, safe landing for the people who worked there, and a pretty good return from where they were, for sure, for the investors who were there. And after Avalon wrapped up, I was looking for my next thing, and was talking to the Venture Lab folks, because I had decided that what I really enjoyed was taking things a little earlier in the process. And if people aren't familiar with what Venture Lab does or what they are, if you imagine Georgia Tech as a candy shop, all right, they've got all these cool things there. They've got geniuses there who are figuring out ways to do things. Now, whether they actually solve a real problem somewhere in the world, they don't know yet, all right? But they figured out something that's really cool, all right? And it's different, and it's unique, and they've got all this candy, all right? And the people at Venture Lab, they're like the kids, all right? They get to go play in that candy shop, figure out which one of these things makes sense, find people like me, executives who've had some level of experience around the space they think this concept would be applicable, right, and then partner them up with the researchers and the PhDs and try to figure out, you know, in the proverbial, is there a pony there somewhere? You know, is there a business here somewhere? And if there is, you know, they engage with Georgia Research Alliance to get seed funding. There's grants that you can get from National Science Foundation, et cetera, and you can advance this concept along. One of those things that I worked on was Whisper Communications, all right? And Whisper was this neat set of technology that had been invented between a bunch of bright guys at Georgia Tech, a bunch of guys who earned their PhDs on some of the underlying research, partnering with people from Cambridge and KAIST and ETRI. KAIST and ETRI are South Korean research powerhouses, as well as the University of Portugal in Portugal and Georgia Tech Lorraine. So a really broad group of really bright people working on a way to protect wireless communications, all right? Another way of putting a level of security around what wireless communications can do. And the way that they approached it, it was a unique way. They took something sort of like error correction encoding, which normally enables a signal to go further because it helps correct the signal if there are errors. They use that kind of technique, but instead of correcting it, it killed it. So the net effect is, if you can think of the movie, you know, or the TV show, depending upon your age, Get Smart, all right, and the cone of silence, all right, that's what Whisper does. It creates that cone of silence. So if you and I are in that cone and we're talking, you can hear everything I'm saying. It's fine, all right? And Whisper really doesn't degrade the process of the data flowing back, you know, between us. If somebody's outside the cone, they get nothing. They just get noise, static. They have no usable information. And that's pretty cool. Now, what's interesting is it actually has a lot of real-world applications. So if you're trying to do something around proximity commerce, which would be mobile payments, you're doing something, maybe a Bluetooth conversation between your headset and your cell phone. Maybe you've got an access control card to get into a building. You know, you've got a lot of applications where you're wanting to exchange, you know, I call it a credential, some data about you. You're saying, I'm allowed to get in this building. Here's my credential. Please let me in. You probably don't want people around you to be able to grab that credential out of the air as it passes and then copy it and use it. You sure don't want that to happen if you're doing a mobile payment and you're, you know, paying with near-field communication. You don't want the guy in line behind you to steal your credit card. You know, you don't want those things to happen. You don't want people in the car next to you to listen in on your cell phone as you're driving down the road and grab your Bluetooth. So, you know, there's a lot of real-world applications, you know, for this technology that they created. And that was kind of the journey that we embarked on of let's find where this solution, where, if anywhere, because a lot of times the solutions don't have applicability, where the solution actually fits in the world. What does it fill as fake Grimlock, who if you're not on Twitter and you don't know about the wonderful robot dinosaur, as he says, you know, go find the hole in the world and, you know, and fill it. All right. Well, there's a huge hole in the world. It's around security. All right. Every day, every year, it gets worse. All right. What was secure a week ago isn't secure next week. The only thing that's certain within security is you can't have enough. All right. And so what Whisper is another way of securing that data. Just like you wouldn't have one password on your computer or one firewall up and nothing else, you know, you need layers of security. Whisper creates another layer at a physical layer using a physical attribute, the distance, and the degradation of the data to protect the data stream. It's a unique way of doing it, and I think it's a brilliant invention. And I get to work with some of the greatest guys you could ever think of working with. So
where is Whisper in the process? Are you beta, or you've got some customers?
We're close to customers, I think. But the problem with companies like Whisper when you're selling into bigger companies. Whisper is not something that you sell to the bodega on the corner. You know, Whisper is something you sell to one of the processors, one of the credit card brands, you know, an access control. They are big sales. They are complex sales. They are long sales. And if you're in an early stage company, they are very frustrating processes to go through because your sense of urgency is, you know, 100x what somebody else in those large companies' sense of urgency is, but I think we've made great progress. We've worked with, you know, some Fortune 50, Fortune 5, you know, companies, understanding their needs, which, you know, we'll talk a little bit about that. As we talk about some processes we do at Venture Lab and ATDC, but understanding what the customer needs, all right, and then trying to figure out a way to solve the problem. Selfishly, within the parameters of what we can do, but what do they need? What are their requirements? What hole do they have in their process? Is Whisper a product that can solve that for them? And so we've got, you know, in effect, the product is built. It's software. It's algorithms. It's processing. We've got it working on, you know, from one cell phone to another. You know, using the NFC phones. We've got it built on. Smart cards to where it can encode data and then process it back. So, in effect, the hard work is done. The really hard work, the inventions, were done a while ago. The next layer of work, you know, getting functional, you know, beyond prototypes, functional product, you know, that's done. And now the last work, always the most difficult, the last, is getting into some revenue producing customers. So that's hopefully soon on the horizon.
Well, being in Atlanta, Georgia, has got to be a great place to be. We've moved more and more into the payment space. We have, from where we're sitting right at this moment, First Data is a mile away. Elavon, big billion-dollar company, part of U.S. Bank, is half a mile away. I think Global Payments is one building across the parking lot. And that's just to guess, just two or three off the top of my head. You could probably name 12 others that are here in the Atlanta area. Why has Atlanta become such a payments city?
Yeah, I think it has to do with, you know, if you go back in the history, there was First Financial Management did a great job of, you know, kind of building up processing, and First Financial Management got bought by First Data, which put a presence here. NDC, which owned NDC Health and Global Payments, both was based here. You know, a number of companies kind of got based here. CheckFree was founded and then moved here. I think some of it was luck, some of it was location. Atlanta's a great place if you're trying to build an international business to build it from. All of the things that, you know, the Chamber of Commerce would talk about, the, you know, the nice climate, the great people, the wonderful cost of living. They'd probably leave out the traffic on some days, but you know, that's a problem in a lot of places. You know, all of those things are attractive, and if you're trying to build a payments business, this is a great place. Particularly now, this is a phenomenal place because you can go have those discussions. You know, one of the first discussions, you know, after I saw Whisper, after the Venture Lab guys showed me Whisper, and said, "What do you think?" I said, "Boy, I think this is really applicable to payments. I think that's where this has a use case." And I called some guys that I knew over at First Data and said, "I've just seen this technology. Is this something that would interest you?" You know, their response was, "When can you meet?" All right, yeah, and I was, you know, half joking and said, "Well, you know, I'm like 20 minutes away by car. You know, I could come on down now." It's like, well, it doesn't have to be that quick, but you know, it's kind of easy. We didn't have to get on a plane to fly somewhere to talk to our potential customers. You know, we can see them, you know, at ease. And I think as you look to build a business, if you're looking to me, the most important thing as you look to where do I want to base my business, you want to be close to where your customers are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, there's a great reason why a lot of companies have offices in Bentonville, all right, because they want the people that are dealing with Walmart to be right there. All right. And if you don't have people right there, you know, you're at a disadvantage. If you're dealing in and around payments or security, all right, Atlanta is a great place to be. And Whisper, at least for, you know, the handful of the use cases that we've identified, is really at the intersection of payments and security. You know, so the people who understand both of those industries are here. Good customers from both of those industries are here. So as we look to grow and scale our business, you know, talent, customers, et cetera, they're all here.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so this is a great place.
You just answered a question that I've had, and I've never heard a good answer other than the Chamber of Commerce answer, all the good things and what have you. But I've always wondered how Atlanta's become such a great security hub. ISS, eventually acquired by IBM, SecureWorks, eventually acquired by Dell. I think of 10, 12 other security firms. But I think the answer is, going back to what you just said about being close to your customers, there's no industry that needs to be more secure than the payments industry. And so these companies, I think, whether they intentionally did it or not, I think the reason we've grown into be such a security hotbed probably is because the financial industry and the payments industry were here first. Would you halfway agree to that?
Yeah, I probably would. I think if you wanted the right answer, I'd talk to Tom Noonan. I think he could tell you the right answer. I think a lot of reasons why the security is here is because of Tom Noonan, right, and what they were able to do at ISS, and then companies that kind of derived off of that and then fed off of that, and you know, whether they were founded by people who got their money out of the deal or whether they were influenced by people or advised by people, you know, the great thing about having a success in an industry or in a vertical is if somebody sticks around. You know, if they say, I'm taking my $100 million and I bought a boat and I'm out of here, all right, well, then that doesn't do a lot for the community. You know, if they take a David Cummings approach that says, I got my $100 million, I'm buying a building in Buckhead and I'm going to do the next thing and I'm going to fund a bunch of businesses, that success really, really flows downhill. And, you know, if you look around, a lot of the folks from ISS, you know, are still here. You know, Tom just sold another business.
Right? Jolex.
107, I think, something like that. So, you know, there's those people have not, you know, taken the chips off the table and gone away. You know, in fact, they've doubled down. You know, they put money back into it, and as importantly, they've put themselves back into it. You know, you know, Tom stepping in and taking a management role at that company. You know, on paper, you'd look at that and say, what was he thinking? Yeah, he was running a billion-dollar publicly traded business, and now he's running this little startup. Well, yeah, before the business was $1 billion and publicly traded, it was a little startup.
No question. So. And I think it goes back to kind of where you and Startup Gauntlet and how we kind of got to this part of the conversation. If you think about it, Chris Kloss, who was the creator of ISS, a Georgia Tech student, I think working out of his dorm room or mother's or grandmother's apartment. I can't remember exactly how the story began. When he started going around looking for money, he ends up with Sig Mosley, who's sat in the same chair you're sitting in. And they brought in Tom because they wanted a seasoned veteran. They knew that this Chris Kloss was a very smart, intelligent young guy, but he probably didn't have that that back-end ability to start and run and really make a company successful like you're doing at Whisper. Tom was brought in. He was an ex-MSA person who worked with Sig and Mr. Imlay over the years. So I guess that really is a lot of what Venture Lab's doing, marrying smart people like yourself and Tom and others into this early stage environment. Is that kind of part of Venture Lab's thrust?
Yeah, I think it. I'm not sure they'd say it exactly that way, but that may actually be a better way to say it. You know, they definitely act as a matchmaker. You know, they find You know, they find interesting technology, all right? They try to run a screen as to, you know, where do we think this may fit, all right? You know, if Whisper's best use case were healthcare, I'm the wrong guy. You know, the bulk of my career is in and around payments, all right? The value that I bring beyond the value of I've been an executive before, and that's kind of transferable, but the real value I bring is the connections and the reputation within the payments industry, the ability to talk to those people that are we believe, our highest and best probable first customers, all right? If it were healthcare, I'd be the wrong guy to throw in there because I have nobody that I know in that. So they have to make some screen as to where we think this makes sense and then identify somebody who's got that kind of a background to plug into them so that, you know, you can get in front of customers. One of the things that we've really become, you know, some people would say we're almost annoying about it in the way that we beat on it, is something we've now turned into a course called Startup Gauntlet, which is customer discovery, all right? And there's the great business model canvas, which, you know, you lay out what's my value proposition, who are my customers, how am I going to reach them, you know, what are the attributes of, you know, what are the key things that people are interested in? By the way, what's it going to cost to create my business and my product? What can I sell it for? You know, all of those categories. Startup Gauntlet focuses on two. That's it, just two. What is your value proposition? What is the problem you're going to solve? All right, and then who are your customers? For who? And then we push the entrepreneurs to get out and go talk to the customers. Come up with a hypothesis. I think you have this problem. And then go talk to people who you believe are your customers about the problem you think they have. And ask why, to the point of almost annoyance. Well, why is that? I have this problem. Well, why is that? Well, because of this. Well, why is that? Right? And you keep going back, and as you kind of peel back the layer, you'll find out really what's causing the problem. Sometimes, if you're some measure of luck, you'll find out that what you thought was right and the solution you were envisioning building will work, all right? And that's a great feeling. Sometimes you'll find out what you thought was right is totally wrong, and what you were going to build is a disaster because nobody has that problem. They don't need you to solve it, and you're going to build it and hope nobody's going to buy the thing. And you may think that's a really bad feeling, but you know what? That's equally as good of a feeling. Because you're not going to waste the next 6 months building something and then putting it into market and saying, here's my product, do you want it? Well, no. Nobody wants grapefruit wine. You know? Nobody's going to buy that. So why don't you find out if people like grapefruit mixed with wine? And if the answer is no, then save yourself the effort. Don't go build that product. So that's one of the things that we do at Startup Gauntlet. And Startup Gauntlet is a program by Stephen Fleming and Keith McGregor and Paul Fried and myself, basically a skunk works within Stephen Fleming's organization. We also have one called Pitch Gauntlet, where we work on people's ability to tell stories, because that's all pitching is. There's a 30-second story. There's a 3-minute story. There's a 6-minute story. There's a really long and boring story. Hopefully I'm not getting to too many of those today. But there's stories, you know. You got to be able to tell a story. You got to captivate somebody. And so if you're saying, this is my business, this is what I do, there's a way that you want to say things. And there are probably some techniques that you want to avoid. Like you don't say, I'm starting this new business and I have no relevant experience. It may be true, but you don't lead with that. You know, you may lead with, I'm starting this business and it's in this multi-billion dollar industry. And, you know, I've talked to a few customers, you know, that we believe, and boy, they're really validating what we're going to do. And that's why I think we should go do this. Well, do you have any relevant experience? No, not really. But I found that hole in the world. All right. I found that product. So, a lot of cool stuff, at least that I'm exposed to and I get to work on out of Venture Lab. A lot of neat stuff over at Georgia Tech. I wish I could spend more time there. Looking at some of the new things, some great stuff down at Tech Square. And then I also spend some time with TAG, doing their business launch program. Sig Mosley and I've managed early rounds of the judging the last 5 years, I think, for that. And that's a lot of fun. You get to see a lot of, I think we looked at it at my round, we looked at about 65 or 70 companies and screened it down to 25 or so to come present, and then screened that down to 10 to give to Sig to narrow it down to the finalists. And that's neat to see kind of what's bubbling up, what's kind of moving its way through the process. And then one of my favorite things, that one is judging. And I got to admit, I don't like judging as much as I like the coaching processes, because judging, you're really not given a lot of feedback. Somebody comes in, you score them. It's almost clinical at times. Yep, you got 6 points. You needed 10 to advance. Sorry, you didn't advance. And that's not nearly as fulfilling as coaching. And something I've been involved in for, I guess, the last 4 or 5 years as well is Venture Atlanta, and we put together a great coaching process for everyone that presents at Venture Atlanta. They come in, they do a run through on their presentation. That takes about 6 minutes, and then we spend a good 25 minutes or so, helping try to understand what story should they tell, what fact set do they have that's going to present them in the best light. And Irvash interviewed me last year for a story on it. He said, "Well, how do you judge success? You go through all this process. You try to coach all those guys. How do you judge whether you're successful at it or not?" I said, it's kind of easy. All right. I don't measure it. Venture Atlanta does. They measure it based on funding. I measure it on, did we make a difference? Does the guy get up there? And, this is a harder measure to try to get to. If somebody's not going to get funded, I don't want it to be because of the 6 minutes they had on stage.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want somebody to sit there in 6 minutes and say, "I've judged you uninteresting and unworthy. I'm moving on." I want somebody to look at that and say, "Wow, I want to come grab you and get a cup of coffee and tell me more." If I can get you to tell your story in 6 minutes and get people to come up to you afterwards and say, "I'm intrigued, tell me more," then we've been successful. Yeah. So,
just mentally doing some calculations, 75 companies down to 25, meeting with 25 companies, and then getting the presentations in 5 to 7 minutes, and then the other one at that is literally hours and hours, days upon days, months upon months. But at least they pay well for that, do they not?
Yeah. They actually. I decided. There's a concept in the church called tithing. All right. You're supposed to give a portion of your treasure back to the church, and you're supposed to do that periodically. I've kind of taken that same concept over to charitable time. I try to carve out, on a weekly basis, a chunk of time, 3-4 hours a week, that I give. So right now, every Friday, we're teaching Startup Gauntlet. That's a 2-3 hour, time frame from 7:30 to 10 o'clock or so on Friday mornings. I try to carve the time out, and I put it into my schedule. And I do that for a very selfish reason, okay? If nobody does that, then when I need help, nobody's going to be willing to help me. But if you can create an environment where everybody does that, when I come up to an issue, and I will, and I do, where I need, "Man, what do you do with this? How do you help this?" There's an environment there that people are used to saying, "Sure, I'll give you a hand." And not used to saying that with, it's $500 an hour. I think you could, give me some cash here. All right, but used to it and saying, you got a few minutes, can you help me out here? And I think you can particularly make a difference if you do that with early stage companies earlier in their development. Avoid making mistakes that are costly. And those mistakes are around, trying to build something too early, trying to hire the wrong people, cutting bad deals, And I think you've seen over the past few years down at Georgia Tech at the ATDC, they've created a great curriculum. You know, if you are an entrepreneur now and you're looking at starting a business, you are so much further ahead potentially than what people were 3 or 4 years ago. You should make a lesser number of mistakes. Lots of the low-hanging fruit are taken care of. Mm-hmm. You know? And if you can avoid making those, not having a business license, having to deal with that and pay fines, you know, if you can avoid, you know, those kind of little mistakes, not getting your accounting set up and then having to deal with that when you're raising money, not having the right, you know, the legal structure, you know, lots of basics, right? But if you've never done it before, you don't know about the basics. And you find out about them along the way as you make mistakes. The ATDC can help you, you know, help you do that. And they've been wonderful. You know, when in my early days at Whisper, we were filling out stuff for a National Science Foundation grant. Right, that was new to me. Right, there were lots of people around there that had done a lot of NSF grants, and they could help review your stuff. They could suggest ways to improve it. Right, and we filed, and you know, we got a $150,000 grant. And if you don't know, grants are a wonderful thing. You don't have to pay it back, and it's
no equity,
and it's non-dilutive from a capital structure. Grants are only the only thing that comes close to grants are loans, because they're non-dilutive, right? So, but in the cap table, you'd like to have a lot of grants. Grants are good, right? Then you can have some loans, and then you can raise some capital. You know, capital kind of dilutes the equity. So, you know, having the resources to lean on to help you through that process, I think is a great thing. It's been wonderful to Whisper. You know, Whisper is to me, Whisper is kind of, you know, however it turns out, and early stage businesses are always fraught with risk. I mean, that's something that unfortunately we've not figured out a way to make go away. Right? You've got execution risk, you've got market risk, you've got, you know, all sorts of things that you got to deal with. But what we've done with Whisper in identifying the technology, nurturing it along through some wonderful help from the Georgia Research Alliance, then, you know, Venture Lab really pitching in, and then ATDC helping out, getting NSF grants, and then, you know, Georgia Tech helping through their economic development folks, and getting and the ATDC as well, and getting us in front of, you know, companies that are kind of relevant to us, like NCR and AT&T, and, you know, businesses that you know, honestly would not be looking at a real early stage startup that's got a handful of people and, you know, a couple of handful of cash as somebody that they talk to. They're not gonna take that risk. But if Georgia Tech or the Chamber of Commerce or the governor's office, you know, makes the introduction, you know, you now have a shot. You have the ability to talk about the hole in the world you think they have, and find out if they do, and work with them to get a solution. So, you know, Whisper's been helped along through that process, and we're not alone. There's a whole, you know, go to the Venture Lab website. You'll see their portfolio. Every one of those companies is getting the same kind of assistance. And help along the way.
Well, we could spend about a day and a half talking about the ATDC. It is one of the first and premier incubators in the country. Wayne Hodges, through all the different leadership transitions, and now with Stephen Fleming kind of being the master at control. I had the privilege of spending most of the afternoon with Stephen yesterday, who I have to give a quick little shout-out to. Stephen Fleming is just chosen as one of 70 folks in Atlanta, Georgia, to be included in the Leadership Atlanta Class of 2014, along with my boss and friend, Clint Bailey of Hunter Technical Resources. It's a year-long leadership program, one of the oldest, it is the oldest in the country, and 330 other people who applied did not make it in. But that's the kind of person Stephen is, and I think that you know, having him at the helm there is good for all of our community. You know, I've volunteered and I've given speeches and presentations at ATDC, but I've never been involved as intimately as you are, and I imagine it's pretty interesting. What is it like working with all the the PhDs and the mental gurus and the guys that, you know, when they say hello, that's the last part of the conversation I followed.
Yeah, I think, you know, I have been phenomenally lucky. And you know, maybe that is just that luck. Or maybe it's that the Georgia Tech has, you know, kind of a different class of PhDs and professors than, you know, than other places I've been. But everyone I've dealt with, you know, all of the companies that are emerging, I'm on the board of advisors for one called Liquid Text, which was a PhD thesis for a guy, Craig Tashman, who got his PhD from there. Totally open to coaching. Very open to, boy, I don't know this, all right? And, you know, and you say the same thing for Steve McLaughlin and Cenk Arghan and Willie Harrison, who are the guys that I work with on Whisper. Boy, when you have a question, there's not even a hint of, man, you should know this, all right? There's only a, okay, well, let's pause. Let's back up a little bit. Let's explain this because this is important stuff, and you need to know this. Now, you know, I'm never going to know it as well as PhDs in electrical engineering. You know, on the other hand, I better know enough about what I'm trying to talk about that I can talk coherently about it. And every one of them, you know, when they're talking about their passion, their project, their technology, their solution, you know, if you give them, you know, a glazed look at all, you know, if you just kind of look at them like, man, I don't understand this, they pause and say, okay, well, what part of it didn't you understand? Mm-hmm. It's important to me to get you to know this. And when you say, hey, have you thought about doing this or what about this issue? They're all very open to, no, we haven't. You know, let's wow, that's an interesting way of addressing that. So I've been phenomenally lucky, I guess probably truth be told, it's not lucky. There's just a bunch of great folks down there because all of them I've come across, and I've done a bunch of work with the Tiger program, and PhD students there. We've had three Tiger teams that have worked on Whisper over the course of the last couple of years. And Tiger's a program with Emory Law students, Georgia Tech MBA students, and Georgia Tech PhDs. And so you get a PhD, a couple of MBAs, and a couple of lawyers, budding lawyers, you know, to work on your project. Wonderful experiences. Yeah. I keep going back saying, can I have another one? can I have more? Because you get a bunch of really bright people to you know, tackle a problem that you have and you know, come back with some work that, you know, while maybe not quite on par with McKinsey or Bain, the price tag is zero. And it's a lot of fun. And it's not too far off what you'd get from a McKinsey or a Bain. It's phenomenal work from brilliant folks. So, you know, from the Tiger team to Venture Lab to you know, Dr. McLaughlin is department chair for ECE, so I've had, you know, some exposure to some of the other professors there as they've come up with ideas. All of them have been just wonderful, a joy to deal with, and people that, you know, I have no problem, you know, introducing to my friends. Mm-hmm. You know, you should help these guys because they're asking questions because they really want to know the answer. You know, they're looking for help. They're looking for, you know, how can you help me bring this to reality? So.
Well, in addition to Tech, what are some of the other organizations around town? Like last week, Tino Mantella was on the show with us to talk about TAG and what they're doing in these areas. But organizations like the Metro Chamber and the Mayor's Office, Economic Development Authority, State of Georgia, and what have you, are very many of those involved in startups, and are they contributing? I know we just had a huge win in the Georgia State Legislature this year when we had the ability for the Angel Investment Credit to continue and actually to expand, and the state actually is going to start investing some of the our tax revenues or sort of our investment funds that had not been done in the past. But what are the other areas that the Metro Chamber and the Mayor's Office and other folks have been doing that's been helpful to you?
Yeah, I think all of them are taking a fairly active role. And, you know, it's obviously motivated because they've got interests, you know. So all of those groups would like to get more jobs here. with more taxes, more revenue, more, you know, more of all of that. And you know what big companies realize is that small companies can solve problems quicker. They can identify them and create a solution, and they don't have to navigate through all of the political landscape that sometimes exists in a bigger company, or most times exists in bigger companies. And that, you know, if you're really wanting to, you know, find innovative solutions to problems that you have, you probably need to get plugged into the startups. And so you've got some of these organizations. You know, Georgia Tech has folks working on commercializing technology, and they have folks working on helping within economic development and business development. You know, one of the key things that they can do is plug these big companies into Georgia Tech, plug them into ATDC. ATDC has something called ATDC Connect. And the reason that they're able to do that is they've got a willing dance partner on the other side. You know, AT&T comes to look at these companies not to fulfill some promise they made to somebody, but because they're really looking for some companies who've come up with some neat stuff that they could somehow buy, leverage, purchase the company, all of the above. You know, that's what they're looking for. So, you know, those organizations in the middle, you know, they're really in a great position. You know, the chamber has, you know, pretty much all of the heavyweights in town are part of the chamber. They're in a great position to take the trusted relationship they have and then plug it into some of these early stage companies. However, like all things that are networking based, all right, you got to be careful who you introduce to your friends. All right. And so that's where the ATDC can come into play, because they can vet me and say, yep, Jeff is pretty good at these things, maybe not so good at some others, but that they can make sure that the introductions they're making are fruitful, right? So the chamber working with the ATDC, or the governor's office working with the mayor's, I mean, all of those come together. All of them have little chunks of the relationships, and as they work together to make those connections, to make those trusted networking connections. So, you know, I sat down with AT&T talking about Whisper because of introductions that came from Georgia Tech at the highest levels. All right, they were reinforced by the chamber on a task force that they were running on mobility. All right, and ultimately, I got to sit down with the right people around mobile and mobile transactions within AT&T. Those introductions, those things never would have happened if Georgia Tech, Metro Chamber hadn't taken a proactive stance to push me along, you know, push them along, and continue to help, you know, the early stage companies evolve. So I think they're playing a much bigger role than they used to, and I think the mayor was at something at Georgia Tech when they were kicking off, I think, Startup Atlanta. You know, and you know, if the mayor shows up at something, that means it's a big deal, okay? Right? So that was a big deal. You know, and I think that's a great sign. Everybody's viewing this stuff as a big deal, and what people are doing really matters.
So I was back to the thing I was attended yesterday, the Leadership Atlanta orientation. I had 10 different people say to me, this is the year of the entrepreneur. The people that go to this program many times are lawyers and accountants and this, that, and the other. But the entrepreneurial group was huge and extreme. The last 18 months have been very, very good to our city. SecureWorks got acquired by Dell, made Mike Cody and a lot of good friends over there some money. Vitru, Reggie Bradford, and those good folks had another successful exit. Blink Media, David Cummings and Pardot picked up another big check, and then the company that bought them just recently got purchased, I guess, in the last 2 days. And now Jolex, and we're certainly want to hear about Whisper being in that list of companies that cash out for big money one day. What's going on with all the M&A activity, and how does it affect our overall, I guess, karma and mindset and attitude in our community?
You know, I think it's, you know, like a lot of things, it's kind of a mixed bag, all right? There's some wonderful highs, you know, in there. If you were the entrepreneurs that started those companies, that stayed with those companies, or the people that, I think SecureWorks was a, 15 year overnight success, mm-hmm. So that was a, a long time, built a business worth $600-ish million, so certainly a journey worth taking. But that was a fairly long time. But, if you're one of those people and you've made a nice chunk of money, that's a wonderful outcome, all right? It's even better if you can put that money to work in the next generation of startups here. I think the drums will always be beaten everywhere other than Silicon Valley of there's not enough money here. All right. So, as these guys, get successful exits, as they put money back to work, and a lot of them have, as they put themselves back to work. And I think Julex is, a great example of people who've been successful, giving back and, helping another business along. I think all of those things are real positive. I think, kind of a negative, at least to me, is I really like for one of those things to go public. All right. Mm-hmm. And I'd really like for one of those things to still be headquartered here, because I'd really like, I think the really great communities are the ones that have, we need another Coca-Cola, we need another, Global Payments, headquartered here. We need another, First Data, that's headquartered. We need more companies that are in a position to use their currency to buy things. It'd be great if Exact Target were being bought by a company here and not a company in the Valley, right? I mean, I'd like to move those things here. And I'm sure, one of the things is you always fret when those businesses get bought. It's like, what does it do to the rest? As the headquarters of those companies kind of moves, does their charitable donations, do those move? Does their involvement in the community move? Do those commitments move? Does the tax base move? Do they pick the whole thing up and move it? I mean, that happens, in some cases, not in some of the bigger ones usually. But, I'd really like for, some of those, I'd like to see a few, IPOs and, stick around, I mean, it'd been great if IBM, in effect, hadn't come knocking to ISS, and ISS could have, continued along, and, who knows where it could have been. On the other hand, if IBM is knocking at the door offering $1.4 billion, you're probably not doing your shareholders the right thing if you say, no, go away, don't bother me. You got to listen to that, and you got to, do the right thing for everyone. So I think you're seeing with some of those deals that have recently been bought, you're seeing a lot of people put the money back to work here. I'm assuming that they're all getting a call from all the VCs that are raising funds, wanting to know what part of the $50 million fund they'd like to pick up in this next round, and hopefully a lot of them are participating.
I hope so as well. I want to end the show, and actually that's not the truth. I don't want to end the show. I'd like to have about 45 more minutes, which I knew would be the case with you here. We can start a number of different places. We can go back to the biblical aspect of tithing, which I think we're required to give 10% of our first fruits or the things that God actually gave to us first. And then anything above that is a goodwill offering. You probably give 40%, so you've got the 10% taken care of and another 30% chunk. You're one of the most community-minded people that I know, and you got a huge heart and a wonderful family to boot. We've gotten to know each other through a lot of meetings and a lot of different things that we've gone to over the years, but at some point, I guess God was looking after me, which he's been kind to do that for a long time. You invited me to a Monday night wine tasting, and I'm not going to disclose the location, but it's in Cobb County, Monday Night Wine Tasting, that's been meeting on the first Monday of the month for almost 10 years. We only were down to about 4 or 5 minutes, but what's the genesis of that? And then I want to maybe ask a follow-up question to that, but how did that little group get together?
Yeah, it started about 10 years ago with a small group of us who were meeting folks that we realized the others of us should get to know. And if you've ever tried, you know, the normal networking, and you say, "Oh, you should meet this person. Why don't, you know, you guys have lunch, right?" That you know, it's sort of the swing and a miss. You know, that doesn't work. So we decided, since we all happen to like wine, and we enjoyed trying different wines, we decided we would get together on a periodic basis and just invite some of those people. You know, and it was sort of like a blind date type of thing. You'd say, "All right, I'm inviting Ricky Steele, all right, and you need to meet Ricky Steele. But I'm not going to tell Ricky Steele that he's coming because you're going to meet him. Just he'll be here, and then that way you can meet him. And then if anything happens and, you know, you guys hit it off and, you know, it turns out to be a good business relationship, great. That's wonderful. If not, that's fine too. You know, nothing else. We've gotten together, seen how everybody's doing, and had a chance to share some interesting wines. And as my wife would say, you know, it then spun out of control after that. You know, we started out with, you know, six people, eight people. You know, we'd invite one person or two people, and we'd have, you know, 10 people, and, you know, it'd be, you know, kind of relaxed, and you know, that was it. And then I should have known what would happen is, as we would invite people, they would say, "Man, this is great. Can I come next month?" And you kind of wanted to say, "No, actually, we got what we wanted." You know, we made that connection, and you move on, and it became a thing where, you know, you got people together who had an affinity for one another, who had some things in common, in addition to, in most cases, there are a couple of people who come that actually don't drink at all, which is you know, kind of interesting, or don't like wine, you know. So, but you know, by and large, 99% of the people are, "Yeah, I'm really here for the wine and the friendship." You know, they're both, and it's a great way to get together periodically. And, you know, "Hey, what's up? What's going on with you? What's new in your world? What's happening? What do you see?" And you know, and the group has kind of evolved over the 10 years. It's because of my background, it's got a lot of payments folks in it. You know, from Elevon and First Data and others. It's got some, you know, early stage investors and you know, other entrepreneurs and friends, you know, along the way. Mostly a common passion, you know, around wine. You got to really like the people to show up to a wine tasting and not drink the wine. I mean, you know, if you're not into the wine, to sit around and listen to people talking about the wines that they're drinking or what they've seen lately, because, you know, it's funny. A lot of the conversations literally will be, "Hey, have you had that one? I just got a bottle of this from this place. Oh, that's really good. I had this 79. Oh, yeah, the 83 was much better." You know, and if you're sitting there, "What is this?" Yeah, you're probably not coming back the next time. So most everybody's, you know, kind of in it for the wine, and it's been a lot of fun. I've gotten to do some pretty cool things there. One of my good friends, before he moved, still a good friend, he just doesn't come that often, is Stuart Harvey, who used to be the CEO of Elevon. Stuart, when Elevon was being sold to U.S. Bank, Stuart was on conference calls with this investment banker out of New York, a guy named Bob Heyer, who's I've been lucky to have on my board a couple times and done a bunch of work for him. Bob is a consummate investment banker, worked at Citibank, Green Hill, and is now at Houlihan Lokey. They had actually never met in person. Stuart had been on the calls from Ireland. You know, Bob was in New York, and they you know, worked their way through the transaction. And, you know, Bob does, you know, major deals in payments, and he had just never met. So, you know, one Monday evening in my kitchen, I got to introduce Stuart Harvey to Bob Heyer, two good friends of mine who had been wonderful friends over the years and had never met. So there's been a lot of fun fun out of that. A lot of payments folks, a lot of good friends and good wine. What's not to like?
Well, so. It's funny you bring up Stuart Harvey. I couldn't meet Stuart Harvey if I paid the doorman at his building to let me in. Just wouldn't happen. And you were kind to invite me, and I also met Stuart Harvey at your wine tasting, and gave him a copy of my book that had just come out, I guess, 2006 or 7. And he actually left the wine tasting early that night to fly back to Denver, where at that point Elevon had a big part of their technology hub. And I get a voicemail like 2 o'clock in the morning. He said, you know, Steele, I didn't have anything better to do on the flight. And I thought, well, I guess as good a reason as any to read my book. And he said, but I actually read your book and I enjoyed it. And I'd love to meet you. And I was able to work him in the minute he got back in town. And one thing led to another. A great friendship was created as thanks to you. And literally millions of dollars have been transacted since then. Elevon has been one of my largest clients in the history of my working career. And that's one small smidgen of things. I know people that have jobs. I know other money that's been raised. I know other sales have been made. I mean, this has been a catalyst for the entire community. And once again, you cook all the food, you provide a lot of the wine, and the price to attend is absolutely nothing other than being one of the best things in Atlanta, Georgia, an FOJ, friend of Jeff.
It's a lot of fun. I'm trying to keep it from spinning too far out of control, as my wife says, but it's a lot of fun. I look forward to getting together, and it's a place where I know I can catch up with people I haven't seen anywhere else in town, and do it in a way that is much more friendship based than somebody a long time ago told me the key to life is to figure out how to do things based on relationships and avoid transactions. I think the great thing about what we do there is I think if somebody tried to do a transaction, they wouldn't survive.
Well, they'd be thrown out the front door. So. Thrown out the front door. I like to tell people that I'm the world's worst salesman. I do not have a single client. I got a bunch of friends that I do business with from time to time, and then friends of those friends, and somehow it's worked out. Anyway, it has been a great privilege and just a distinct pleasure to have Jeff McConnell, CEO of Whisper Communications, in Booth 61 today. Jeff, thank you very much for being here, and I'd love to have you back sometime in the future to hear more about what Whisper's got going on as you continue to grow that business.
Happy to come back. Thanks for having me.
What a blessing. This is Ricky Steele, and I've finished my coffee in Booth 61. I hope you'll come back and join me for a fresh cup next Wednesday, or by listening to our past shows anytime by going to Booth 61 with Ricky Steele. I always close sharing a blessing for you, your family, and your business. This blessing comes from the Book of Numbers. May the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord turn his face towards you and give you peace. Amen. Again, I'm Ricky Steele. Thank you for visiting Booth 61.